Assalamu alaikum, you're listening to Unity FM on 93.5.
At that time, we didn't even know if the boy was alive or dead, because that's the way we were told. And he was remanded from 2 days in hospital, then he was remanded into prison, and then he was brought up into the magistrate's court, and they remanded him. So about booking visits, they didn't know what to do, so she could read and write, but she said, oh, I don't know how to do an email to book a visit. I don't know what to do and how to send the clothes and that. So this is what we realised, that there's such a gap and there's so many people that can't speak English and read and write. So that's why we decided to set it up. Again, then we were conscious about how the community are going to accept us. And we've had a really good response, because I was already working in the community, I've had a reputation in the community. I didn't have to build my organization. I had to go around and tell them, this is me and this is what I'm doing. So I had a step already in the door, if that makes sense. But yeah, we were, and then we got funding. Little did we know that we're going to have COVID. Like you said, we were just I worked 2 years from home and I used to do a lot of outreach work. And then we got funded and we were ready to take our office up in April, just before the lockdown. Our plan was that we went to Pakistan, that we're going to come back and start in April. Never even thought that this would happen to the world. We were caught in the first lockdown in Pakistan, so our flights were cancelled. We were over there for 2 months, so we had to delay the start of our office. But then obviously, because we work in the community, we were allowed to go to work. We took advantage of that, so we said, okay, well, because it's faster. We got back just before the first Ramadan. We travelled back in Ramadan, and we thought, you know what, let's do Ramadan peacefully at home, and, you know, there's no need trying to set up, and we're going to do fasting, and it's COVID. So that was the first month we spent completely with our prayers and our fasting, and we didn't do anything else. So then we decided that we'll start in June, straight after Eid. So we set up in June in the office on Laidpore Road, as a women's enterprise hub. And yeah, we never looked back. We've been really busy. And I think we're doing a lot of referral base, because people don't know where we are. So we get Children's Trust, and like we've working with the police as well now. So when we said that when someone gets arrested, or you're the first point of contact, so refer the families to us.
I was just going to say, like, how does it work? Because if a lot of these, like, how do you know about when somebody from, you know, the community or whatever has been arrested? And how would anybody, you know, I wouldn't think about there being a service mm-hmm. at all. I would just think, right, I've just got to get on with it. I've got to try to work it out, or Google it, or ask a friend, or speak to the neighborhood police, or something like that. But how would, in the early days at least, how would people have known that there's this Rosie's around, and you know, you can have a chat with her. Around. Yeah, your teas are teams around.
I think it's very well. What happened in the first before COVID? Because obviously, the 2 years that I was working from home, I went to a lot of events. We've done a lot of workshops to let people know that this is what we're doing, if anyone needs support, so that slowly the word got out. Then we really worked. It was very difficult to get the police to do the referral process, but we're getting there. And Children's Trust, we accidentally, so, you know, I was trying to ring people that, oh, we're doing this, and if you need any help, and if you know any families. And then Children's Trust, we're looking for a service to provide support to a family that has someone in prison. And they were like pulling the hair out, thinking, where's this organization? Coincidentally, I just phoned. And I said, oh, we just want to offer, this is a service we're doing. And I said, oh my God, we're just looking for someone like that. So Children's Trust are all over Birmingham, and we kind of network, go to their meetings, team meetings. So they're aware of us, and they're actually sharing our contacts, and people refer, Children's Trust refer, because they're the first point of contacts with the police.
What's it like for, and I'm assuming, is it mainly, and forgive me if I'm incorrect in saying this, but is it mainly the male, or the father, or the son, or some sort of head of the household type of thing that usually gets arrested and possibly charged and so on? And then it's the ladies who are at home have to kind of try to put things together and make sense of the world. Am I right in saying that? And if yeah. that's the case, then is there not that taboo? Isn't there that kind of...
Yes, there is.
You know, it must be very difficult,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I think what happened is because as an organization, because we're supporting families and we come across it not being judgmental, we find that the women find it easy. And I think... They do struggle. I'll just give you, can I give you just a bit of stats?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so I'm just going to say that obviously this is Hamaya Haven's data we just done, March 2022, that the work we've done. So 50% of our clients come from a Pakistani and Kashmiri community, and they're from Birmingham and the West Midlands. So one of the issues they have is lack of English, and which hinders their ability to understand information that disclosed to them from the criminal justice system, or if they get any other letters from any organization or bills. One of the things that they look at, the highest thing that they come across is they're maintaining their income. So we have 57% of the cases that the intervention was to help them manage their finances, so they can end up with rent debt, you know, mortgage debts, or they don't know what this gas bill means or electric bills.
So what kind of advice do you give someone like that?
Because so
you've got the breadwinner almost taken out of the equation. You've got maybe a mum there, maybe has kids. What do they do?
So if someone's completely never worked and they were on benefits before the person went in prison, then they have to have the benefits on their name. What we don't do is fill in the forms in for them because they're quite complicated and they're long. And one of the issues we've also found, everything now is on app. Oh, do this on app, do this on app. They don't even know how to use the video calls and all this, how they're going to use apps. So we refer to an organization that is MECC. They're in Borsal Heath, and they are absolutely amazing when it comes to filling in benefit forms, PIP forms, all these forms that you need to do, council tax benefits. They're really good. So we refer them on to them because that's what their specialty is. If they need any letters, sometimes they need letters translating. We do the translation for the letters. We explain to them what the letter means. If I can give a recent case study that we're dealing with, it might kind of open a bit of issues that women face. There's someone that's came to us. Sometimes they come to us when they're in dire situation, and it's like, what do we do now? So we're not sure what we're going to help, how we're going to help this one. But this lady came to us, and her son had a council premises, and it was disability access because he's got some mental health issues. We're not really found out exactly what. So he ended up in prison just before having the right to buy of that property. And obviously he's due to come out in September, and mum didn't know at the time that there was rent arrears, and she didn't know she had to pay rent, or she wasn't sure what's going on. So this was before we got involved. So she ended up with loads of rent arrears, borrowed money from friends or whatever, paid the rent arrears. She's living in that house, and now they want to evict her just before he's due to come out. But they're going to have him coming out of prison with nowhere to go, and mother, who's living in that house, nowhere to go. And so now she's facing an eviction. But she's come to us now when everything's already took place. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So she bought the letter that the sister made notes of, and we looked at it. We thought, this letter doesn't look that good. And we're kind of having a re-look at it, and we say to her, don't sign anything and don't send anything till we look at it, because this letter's not strong enough to be given to the courts for her not to get evicted. So those are the kind of things sometimes that come to us that we haven't got the expertise, and we'll look for friends or someone who's, because you know, we've got friends who have a load, you know, in lawyers or people who do benefits or whatever. So we'll have to ring around and find out what the rule is, what the law is, before we make her, you know, not make her, but get her to sign so she can give it in. But we told her, don't sign nothing at the moment, because we're not happy the way the letter looks. And sometimes I had one very first when we were newly done. We were working, we didn't have office base, and for this lady, she couldn't speak English, and she was Kurdish, and we had to fill her form in, and her children had to translate. As you do know, young children always end up playing their role as translators. And she went to her country back home, then they came back 4 years after. And whatever happened, when she left the property they were in, this was in West Bromwich, they just gave the keys to the neighbour and said, oh, can you give these keys back in? And whoever moved into that house, the water rate bill was still in her name for 4 or 5 years. And the rent, the council never took the rent off, we don't know how. So she came to me with these letters and she had debts, like, I couldn't
thousands,
believe it.
Probably tens of
yeah,
thousands.
Yeah, so we had to challenge those bills and find her passports and send the passport copies. And we waived that water rate bill and the rent bill. And those are the kind of things that we have to deal with on a day-to-day.
What's kind of like one of the worst scenarios that you've come across?
I think that lady that was helping, the one that I was mentioning about with the bills not being on her name, and she was really, really crying. And I said, oh, you know what, forget it, come on. I put her in the car and we went all the way to Smethwick Council to help her sort this bill out, and sat there till someone saw us that, you know, this bill is not hers. We're trying to tell you she doesn't live there. She left this country at this time. So I think I've supported her for a good few years and to get all her debts sorted. She had huge amount of debts that we got cancelled.
Why do you do what you do? And why did you?
Because it sounds like
such a like with a lot of these community organisations and people who work for these community organisations, and you know, whether it be volunteers or whatever, there's always kind of so much you have to kind of do off your own back. You know, there's so, you know, the blood, sweat, and tears non-stop. And with the kind of organization that you work for, working with women, but men as well, I guess, there's a lot to kind of take on. There's a lot of burden there.
Mm.
You know, do you not get sick of it and think, you know, what am I doing this for? Or it brings you down? Or like, where are you at mentally?
We were talking about that the other day because we put in some funding in, and we asked, someone was helping us do the costings, and we said, oh, should we put in for self-care for the staff, because we got an outreach worker as well, and obviously we got three staff, and I sometimes do feel we just bounce off each other, but we do need an avenue where we can just be away from the work and everything. So I think it does, sometimes you do feel it, because some of the cases we can't really talk about, because if you do, they're already in the media and they're high profile cases and people get identified, so we can't share.
No, we wouldn't want to go into specifics.
So I'm just generally saying that it is hard, because as a mother as well, and when you hear the mother crying, like who was it that day? Yeah, we went yesterday to a home visit, and her son is in a bit of a police radar kind of thing, and they think he's in county lines and he's not listening, he's not been in school. And when we spoke to her, I said, can you tell me from the beginning what's been going on? And he's been moved from, I think it was 7-8 schools different. And I said, he's 16, he's only 16. And I was trying to explain to him that if you're going to carry on, you're going to end up in prison. But he said, I'm not going to end up in prison and I'm not going to do this. But there's always a background to that person that goes in, especially the young kids today. It's really scary the way the young kids are tackling any behavior. They just pull out a knife, or they don't even care, or a gun, and they don't value their life. That's what it's coming across now for the young generation now.
And how do you, when you come across a woman and a mom like that, what do you say to someone like that? I mean, who clearly the kid is
so
off,
hard
off
sometimes
the rails,
because you know that we can't make her son do anything. We can only be there for her to offer her that emotional support. And she was really crying. But what we can't really make promises that we can't do. So we have to always be honest and say that we can only try. So we said we'll look for like apprenticeship for him or something he can do, because we must remember not all kids are cut out to be academic. So there's sometimes these hands-on work, and we need to find those avenues for the young people.
And when you speak to people like that who are in, you know, difficult situations, and then, you know, you kind of go in there with your team and kind of say, right, we're going to do this. You come up with an action plan, I'm assuming. Mm. You know, you got to do this and you got to do that, and this is the agency you want to be speaking to, and then this is the number for the council, and I'll check up on you on Tuesday, and all that kind of stuff. You just put their life in order, as it were. And then when you... What do they say to you? I mean, what are some of the things that, you know, do they just say, you know what, Farishta type of thing. you know,
the lady who's got the eviction issue at the moment, and we phoned her yesterday and we told her don't sign anything because we wanted, because I sent the letter out to a solicitor that I know. And I said, can you just check that does this letter sound, it sounds awful to me, what do you think? I'm not a lawyer, but I knew it was awful. So she said she was really shocked at the way that letter was written. It wasn't really powerful enough to defend her. So she said, she was saying, I'm going to pray for all of you and Allah give you, you know, continue what you're doing. So it's all the du'as that we look at. And we make, to me, is that achievement that we've helped them and we've done something for them. And that's why I do it, because I think I've done it too long in the community supporting people. I remember when I was younger and we used to have the shop right in the middle of Stratford Road.
And what was the name of the shop?
Kashmir Supermarket.
Okay.
We were the first halal meat center, selling halal meat.
No way.
And my mum was a female butcher.
Oh, wow.
She used to cut meat, yeah. And people used to buy meat off my mum, didn't want it off my dad.
Oh, no.
And I remember when women used to come there and they had to go and sign on the Poplar Road. It used to be the signing on office at that time. And they didn't know what to do. And even then, at the age of 10, I used to help them read their letters, tell them what it was. So I started at a very young age, I think, helping translate documents and stuff for people, yeah. So...
So, I mean, you said you started off at a young age and you've always been there in the community. You've always wanted to help. You've always wanted to assist. Where do you think that comes from?
I'm not really sure.
Is that your parents?
I think,
do you see it elsewhere?
I think my father used to be, he used to always help people. And I always remember reading the junk paper every day. He used to go to the market. His junk paper used to be delivered at the shop and he used to read it. And it was always about politics and all that kind of stuff. And it drew my attention to that, the issues in the community, issues in Pakistan. I didn't really take much interest in Pakistan at the time till I went later on back into education to do my foundation degree in leadership and management. And then someone said, oh, you know, write on a leader. And someone said, why you want to do the leaders they're suggesting? Why don't you do Qaid-e-Azam? And then I decided to do the founder of Pakistan, Qaid-e-Azam. And when I did the history, that made me interested in Pakistan history. So then I got into understanding a bit more about our own culture, where we're from and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I think I've been doing it for too long now and I can't see myself doing anything else. And I enjoy it. It's not that I don't, because we get satisfaction out of it.
Okay, let's take a bit of a breather there then and let's play very quick and sheet. We'll be back after this.
هل لك سر عند الله بينك أنت وبين الله هل لك صدقات تخفى لا يعلمها إلا الله هل لك سر عند الله بينك أنت وبين الله هل لك صدقات تخفى لا يعلمها إلا الله قصص لا تكشف إلا بكتابك حين ترى الله ما أحراك بهذا أن يكبر قدرك عند الله قصص لا تكشف إلا بكتابك حين ترى الله ما أحراك بهذا أن يكبر قدرك عند الله هل لك سر عند الله بينك أنت وبين الله هل لك صدقات تخفى لا يعلمها إلا الله قصص لا تكشف إلا بكتابك حين ترى الله ما أحراك بهذا أن يكبر قدرك عند الله هل لك سر عند الله بينك أنت وبين الله
هل لك صدقات تخفى لا يعلمها إلا الله؟ هل لك سر عند الله بينك أنت وبين الله؟ هل لك صدقات تخفى لا يعلمها إلا الله؟ قصص لا تكشف إلا بكتابك حين ترى الله. ما أحراك بهذا أن يكبر قدرك عند الله؟ قصص لا تكشف إلا بكتابك حين ترى الله. ما أحراك بهذا أن يكبر قدرك عند الله؟
هل لك سر عند الله بينك أنت وبين الله؟ هل لك صدقات تخفى لا يعلمها إلا الله؟ قصص لا تكشف إلا بكتابك حين ترى الله. ما أحراك بهذا أن يكبر قدرك عند الله؟
أغيب وذو اللطائف لا يغيب، أغيب أغيب وذو اللطائف لا يغيب، وأرجوه رجاء لا يخيب. أغيب وذو اللطائف لا يغيب، لا يغيب، وأرجوه رجاء لا يخيب، لا يخيب. وأسأله السلامة من زمان بليت به نوائبه تشيب، وأنزل حاجتي في كل حال إلى من تطمئن به القلوب. فكم لله من تدبير أمر طوته عن المشاهدة الغيوب، وكم في الغيب من تيسير عسر ومن تفريج نائبة تنوب، ومن كرم ومن لطف خفي ومن فرج تزول به الكروب. ومن لي غير باب الله باب، ولا مولى سواه ولا حبيب. كريم منعم بر لطيف، جميل الستر للداعي مجيب. حليم لا يعاجل بالخطايا، رحيم رحيم غيث رحمته يصوب. فيا ملك الملوك أقل عثاري، فإني عنك أن أتني الذنوب. وأمرضني الهوى لهوان حظي، ولكن ليس غيرك لي طبيب. فآمن روعتي واكبت حسودا، فإن النائبات لها نيوب. وآنسني بأولادي وأهلي، فقد يستوحش الرجل الغريب. ولي شجن بأطفال صغار، أكاد إذا ذكرتهم أذوب. ولكني نبذت زمام أمري لمن تدبيره فينا عجيب هو الرحمن حولي واعتصامي به وإليه مبتهلا أتيب إلهي أنت تعلم كيف حالي فهل يا سيدي فرج قريب فيا ديان يوم الدين فرج هموما في الفؤاد لها دبيب وصل حبلي بحبل رضاك وانظر إلي وتب علي عسى أتوب وراعي حمايتي وتول نصري وشد عراي إن عرت الخطوب وألهمني لذكرك طول عمري.